Tax Committee, so the Tax Committee wants a lot of details. So we're thrilled you're here. I know, Commissioner, that you've spent a couple of years going all over the state of Minnesota and trying to hear from businesses and Minnesotans on what they would like to see the governor do, and I guess we're going to hear from you today on what you finally decided. And members should know we're not going to take public testimony today. We're not going to take public testimony this week. I've had a lot of people on both sides of all kinds of issues within this bill ask me when they can testify, and I've also had a lot of people on all sides ask, you know, tell me they don't really know the details yet, so they want to learn about the bill as well. So hopefully they're listening or they're here or whatever. So we're not going to take public testimony on the tax provisions for the governor's proposal this week. We may get to it next week. I just had a quick conversation with Commissioner Revenue, but you know, I think this committee and Representative Davids might want to chime in here. This committee historically really likes to look at language before it's really going into the details of bills. And you know, generally when a governor, and this was true with Governor Plenty and Ventura, after they release their budget, it takes a while for all the departments to write the language. So you know, I don't know if it would be really fruitful to have testimony without language. So I think we want to kind of wait and see how fast the Department of Revenue can get us the language and all the provisions. But you know, Representative Davids, I don't know if you want to chime in here on your thoughts on this, but you know, I think it's hard for us to have the public weigh in when we don't actually have a bill. So my thought was we hear the bill this week and then we get to public testimony as soon as we've got language. And you know, I'm open to anybody who thinks that's the wrong way, and just interested in, you know, Representative Davids, what you might think about how we should proceed with hearing this proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that makes a lot of sense. We need to, before I have public testimony, we need to know exactly what they're testifying on. So hopefully we can get some language around quickly so that we can start working on that.
Thank you. Commissioner, before you start, and not to put pressure on you before you've even started, is there a rough time frame that we can expect to start to see language, just for members understand? You know, this committee historically gets into the every nuance of every tax provision, you know, how you write the LGA formula, how, you know, all the runs, all the things we want to see. And right now I know we're going to hear kind of a broader view of all these things and how they work together, but do you have any information as to when the time frame? And I'm asking really for the public, because the public, you know, most of our committees are televised and the public is interested in this proposal, and just kind of when we might know, see a little language.
Sure, Madam Chair. Thank you for the invitation to be here. I think our current target is sometime next week. Now, I don't know in terms of your committee schedule if it can get introduced and around soon enough on your schedule for next week, but we'll give you a better date on that. But we're shooting for next week. I don't know exactly yet.
Okay, great. Representative Carlson. Yeah,
Madam Chair, that is a positive comment, because the House rules provide that the administration bills should be before us within 20 days after the budget comes out, if you want to avoid an additional committee. Otherwise, they have to go to the Rules Committee for re-referral. So if next week would fit that timeline, that would be positive.
And I should add, then, members should get in your tax bills. I know you all have more than is out there, because lots of people bipartisanly have talked to me. And we may have some committee time to start hearing some members' bills as we wait for language. And I know that Chair Dabney, and I talked to him earlier, you know, for example, there's a number of members on both sides of the aisle who have tax increment financing bills that they're working on. Get them in, folks, because we need to start having those hearings in the division and get them back to the full. So if we don't get language right away and the commissioner uses the full 20 days, then we may want to start hearing some members' bills. So just a note to kind of start dual tracking some ideas that folks have in this committee. So thank you. With that, Commissioner, welcome, and hoping we can hear the whole thing in its entirety, because I've listened to the governor say repeatedly it's a package of everything together, and then take questions. And there, you know, we'll take questions for as many days as there's questions, but we want to give you our undivided attention to understand the proposal before we start looking at the pieces. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I think I'd like to start actually where you did, Madam Chair, and that is the idea of the package. And to give you a little bit of, just a little bit of background, because I will try to get into the area so that we can get this discussion going as soon as possible. But I do wanted to start. I do want to start by talking about the challenge that that we face and the governor faced in putting together his budget and revenue package. Clearly, one of the things that the governor looked at, the entire administration looked at, was first of all solving the $1.1 billion deficit. That is item number one on the list, is we have to obviously solve that going forward. Then the next thing really that the governor wanted to make sure that is that we made some new investments in education, in our economy, and jobs, so that going forward, whether it's early childhood education or all-day kindergarten, that we had the resources to make investments in these new areas. And also he wanted to make sure that we paid back the school debt and that we achieved structural balance. So that was a challenge, was trying to solve that global problem. Now, the governor's package does that in the sense that we fully, in the sense that we pay back the, or fulfill the $1.1 billion deficit. Excuse me. Bad start here. The governor's package really was designed, as I mentioned, to solve the $1.1 billion deficit in this biennium, which we do. And then making the investments, we wanted to make sure that the budget was balanced in this biennium and also in the next biennium. We were really looking at structural balance so that we could look to the long term and not just this biennium. One of the things that we heard, that I heard traveling around the state and the governor heard as well in many different occasions, was the desire by many Minnesotans for us to solve the long-term cycles of deficit after deficit after deficit. I think we've had 9 deficits in the last 11 years. And they really made it crystal clear that they want us to come forward and solve the problem, not just for this biennium, but for the next biennium as well. So that's why the challenge that we face in putting together this package is one of solving the deficit, making the investments, and also solving the long-term problem for the next biennium and making sure that we pay all of our debts. The school debt is fully repaid in the second biennium that we go forward. So I think one of the things that I will talk a lot about today and engage all of you in is this discussion about if you have some new ideas or some suggestions or criticisms about the plan, that's fine, let's talk about them, but they need to be also in the context of how are we going to solve this problem, because I think we all feel the need to make sure that Minnesota has a long-term budget solution that doesn't just look for the short term. So as we went through the budget process, we really wanted to make sure that the budget, that we transparently spend no more than we raise, that we pay all of our debts, that there are no one-time fixes, that it's transparent how we're raising the revenue for this budget, that we invest in education and job creation, and that we reform how government services are delivered so people get a good value for the dollars that they spend for their state government. So the goals of now dropping down into the tax reform proposal itself, the goal of the tax reform proposal was to really, first and foremost, to reduce the reliance and the continuing reliance on property taxes. As I'm sure you've all talked about and we've all heard in our different communities, the increase in property taxes this last decade has left a lot of people very concerned and upset with the growing reliance of property taxes at the local level and at the state level as well. Clearly, this is one of those areas where we have a dual responsibility with our local cities and counties and school districts in terms of how they raise money, but we also have the statewide business property tax. So there really is a connection here that we need to work together to make sure that property tax owners feel some relief. So our package in the property tax area was designed, first of all, to make sure that the homeowners got a $500 rebate on property taxes to make a clear signal that we really are trying to do our best to reduce the reliance on property taxes. We also wanted to make sure that businesses had a relief provision based on the statewide business property tax. So in the property tax area, that was first and foremost in trying to address the growing reliance on property taxes. In the income tax area, we've asked the top 2% income earners to pay an additional 2% on income above certain thresholds that I'll go through in just a moment. But the idea here was one of fairness, making sure that everyone pays their fair share. in the level, in the area of the corporate income tax, we wanted to make sure that we leveled the playing field as best we could, made so that everyone paid their fair share, and that was by reducing certain corporate deductions for some corporations so that all corporations would pay a lower overall corporate income tax rate. And finally, we wanted to update the sales tax so it reflected the service economy that we currently live in, where two-thirds of all purchases now are for services, not goods. We wanted to update and stabilize the sales tax revenue stream so that we could have a more sustainable source of revenue in the future. Ultimately, the package that the governor is proposing strives to rebalance the three sources of income, the property tax, the sales tax, and the income tax, so that they more approximate equal amounts so that we can rely on all three sources and not have the property tax become such an outlier in terms of the amount that we rely on property taxes. Let me jump in right away to the property tax area and explain the governor's proposal, and then we can obviously take questions. The three main proposals are in the property tax area. The first one is a property tax rebate of up to $500 for homeowners. This is based upon the property tax the people pay in 2013. So on the 2014 income tax return, there'll be a line on the income tax return where you can claim a deduction for the property taxes that you paid in 2013, 100% of the property tax liability up to $500. This would affect about 1.5 million homeowners. This begins in 2014 and continues. We would also ask for a temporary freeze on the rate of inflation for the statewide business property tax. As you all know, the business property tax makes up about 30% of a business's property tax bill, typically around the state. And that property tax component that is a statewide property tax is adjusted every year for inflation. And that inflation has been in place since, I think, about 2002. The proposal would freeze the tax for 2 years, in 2014 and 2015, so there would be no increase in the statewide business property tax for those 2 years. And then beginning in 2017, there would be a permanent reduction so that the rate of increase in the future would be only one half of inflation after or beginning in 2016. Another component, the third component of property tax relief, would be increasing aid to local cities and counties. The overall effect of these three property tax measures would have the combined effect of reducing property taxes by about 9.7% in Minnesota in 2014. Let me talk a little bit more about the property tax rebate. The statewide reduction for homeowners and property taxes as a result of the $500 rebate to homeowners and farmstead owners would be about a 22% rate reduction overall. For those folks who don't file income tax returns, they would have to file an income tax return for this rebate, but we would provide a mechanism to help and assist in that process. One of the things that we've noticed with the increase of about 86% in property taxes in the last decade is that there are a number of different ways that we can adjust the property taxes in the state, and we all know how complicated our property tax system is. But the governor was convinced that this was the most appropriate and direct way that property tax owners, homeowners, could feel the result of this reduction. Now, in addition to the property tax rebate of $500, there's also two property tax refund programs that we currently have. The governor recommends that we continue to support the current property tax refund for homeowners based upon income, and also for renters based upon income. So those two programs would continue, but they obviously are targeted to a different group of people and are based on income. The rebate program is not based on income, but is based upon the amount of taxes paid. The elimination of the increase in the statewide business property tax is one that there's been a lot of support for over the years. One of the concerns that the governor has heard throughout the state, and I'm sure most of you have too, and that is the businesses' concerns about the growing property taxes that they experience. And as we all know, when businesses have to pay more property taxes, it's not based on income or more profits. They still have to pay that increased property tax. So this is one way to provide some relief to businesses throughout the state that they won't have to worry about the statewide property tax increasing for them. Now, the reduction that will occur for the business property tax is about $120 million through 2017. So this, the freeze and the reduction in the increase beginning in 2016 has about $120 million effect over the next few years. The cost to the state is about $25 million in the first fiscal year. The last area that we propose making changes is in the local government aid and county program aid. And in those two areas, we would increase the amount allocated to city government aid by $80 million for 2014 and thereafter, about a 19% increase. And we would recommend increasing the allocation to county program aid by $40 million beginning in 2014 and each year thereafter. We have seen that the cities and counties and townships have struggled mightily this last decade, as we all have, in dealing with our restricted budget situation and in our the recession that we experienced after 2000, and also the big recession that we experienced in 2008. We've all had to adjust, both all of us personally, our businesses have had to adjust, the state government's had to adjust, and so have cities and counties, townships and school districts. So we believe that this is an opportunity to reinvest in our local cities and counties. As we all know, the local government aid is determined by a need-based formula, and that formula tries to match the overburden of some cities with an old infrastructure or a lot of exempt property. But there are different ways of measuring need, and then trying to see, does that particular jurisdiction have enough property tax capacity or base to support those needs? And so the whole goal for many, many years of local government aid has been to identify need, identify where the property tax base doesn't fulfill that need, and figure out ways to try to fairly allocate money to those cities and communities that need that additional money. But part of the problem with the current local government aid formula is that it's been around for over about 10 years, and it's fairly complex, somewhat difficult to understand, and it's not been all that predictable. But the other part that's not been predictable is the fact that we haven't been funding local government aid in a predictable way either at the state level. And so this has forced a lot of really serious budget problems for local cities and counties. So we will be proposing, once we get into the property tax division and some more detail there, we will be as well discussing here at a later time a formula for redistributing the LGA to the cities and counties. We believe the new formula will be more understandable, it'll be more predictable and stable, and we hope it kind of makes sense. It'll be based on factors that people can see make sense in terms of what the need might be. But really, the major component of local government aid, as we see it, is in addition to the formula, is the fact of funding it now and in the foreseeable future, so that cities and counties can have some predictability and know what kind of funding source they're going to have. I think it'll be a challenge for all of us to talk about identifying needs and figuring out how to distribute local government aid to our local communities. In the income tax area, the governor has proposed the creation of a fourth tier for the top 2%. So the income tax would begin at taxable income of $250,000 for married folks. It would be $200,000 for head of household and $150,000 for individuals. That's taxable income. This is a rule of thumb. A typical married family with two kids would have generally about $306,000 of total household income that would equate to approximately $250,000 of taxable income after deductions, exemptions, and credits. Now, the new rate would begin at those income amounts, and the new rate would be at 9.85%. We believe this would impact about 2% of all the Minnesota resident returns. Under this proposal, the fourth tier would raise about $1.1 billion in this next biennium. In terms of looking at small businesses, we believe that the impact of this for those folks who have business entities that are subchapter S or partnerships, what we call flow-through entities, would be fairly minimal. As we all know, people make a decision about how to incorporate their business. If they have a C corporation, then obviously the C corporation itself is taxed at the income level, at the entity level for income tax, and then the shareholders or owners are taxed on dividends that are distributed. That's really two different taxes. For these flow-through partnerships or subchapter S companies, there's only one level of tax, and that's when the profits flow through to the business partners in the entity. And so we believe about 94% of small businesses will not pay any more tax because of the fourth tier, simply because of the income amount doesn't there aren't that many businesses that have income amounts above that level. In the corporate tax reform area, the main component here was again fairness and trying to level the playing field. We've talked about these issues for a number of years since I've been here, and I know that you all have talked about these issues before. And the idea here is to remove some of these tax breaks for some corporations so that all corporations can pay a lower rate. The rate would go from the fourth highest in the country at 9.8% to the 12th highest at 8.4%. It's the largest rate reduction we would have had in 26 years. We think it simplifies and modernizes the tax code. There'll be a lot of Minnesota corporations that will pay a lower income tax rate at the corporate level because of this rate reduction. One of the reasons we selected the items that we did was because we wanted to make sure that the corporate income tax system became more fair and the tax breaks really were available to either everybody or essentially no one. So the proposal is to eliminate the foreign operating company a tax break as well as a foreign royalty payment tax break. We think that by eliminating these tax breaks, the revenue that is generated from the elimination of these tax breaks will entirely fund the rate reduction. So all the money that is generated, revenue that is generated from reducing these tax breaks goes into rate reduction. We have a couple of other smaller items that are included in that list. We would require a change in the definition of some Minnesota sales unitary groups so that we think it would be more fair for companies that isolate their sales in one entity versus another to try to avoid some of the sales factors in Minnesota. We believe this is a more fair way to define Minnesota sales for unitary groups. We would change the treatment of some foreign partnership income items. We would exclude certain dividends from real estate investment trusts because really at this time they're getting a double deduction from some of these dividends. We would also ask that an economic substance test be implemented, which would require business transactions to meet a substance test in determining taxation. Right now at the federal level, I think it was enacted in 2010, there's a economic substance test that requires that a party must show that the transaction really changes the taxpayer's economic position in a meaningful way and that it has a substantial purpose other than its tax effects. This has been effective at the federal level to make sure that when businesses engage in activities and take advantage of certain tax rules, that there's a business purpose for that transaction other than just getting the tax benefits. And I'll hit the last area here, the sales tax area. The governor has really proposed a dramatic change in the sales tax rate. One of the things that we were trying to make sure that any reform in the sales tax area had to include a major change in the sales tax rate. Taking the rate from 6.875 down to 5.5% takes us from a high of the seventh highest in the country to the 27th highest in the country, a dramatic shift, putting Minnesota in the lower tier of sales tax rate states. We believe that this tax rate reduction will make the system, frankly, more progressive by reducing the taxes that people pay at the lower income levels. We think that it will help stabilize revenues for the long term by coupling the reduction in the sales tax rate to an expansion in the base. As you all know, our current tax system is such that two-thirds of the services we buy now are services and one-third are goods. We believe that this would more accurately reflect the economy that we have. The sales tax general rate would be at 5.266 and the legacy rate would be adjusted to 0.234. As most of you know, the constitutional language for the legacy require or permits that the sales and use tax, if it is changed, and the sales and use tax rate in this section for the legacy may be proportionally adjusted by law to within 1/1000th of 1% in order to provide as close the same amount of revenue as the as practicable. And so what we've tried to do is do the formula so that we generate the same amount of revenue for the legacy fund. In addition to the sales tax rate reduction and expansion, we would include affiliate nexus in order to require those companies that have affiliates and sponsors in Minnesota to collect sales tax, such as the Amazon issue, as we've heard about, that if they're going to sell into Minnesota and they're going to have affiliates and sponsors in the state, that they should also have to pay sales tax. Obviously, we would like to have all sales taxes collected at the internet on internet sales and out-of-state sales, but that's going to require an act of Congress to make that change. We hope that happens, but we can't count on that, obviously, at this point. We've included some definitional changes so that goods include digital goods, direct satellite services, and other kinds of items that we just haven't kept our tax code up to date on. We would include in the definition or in the taxation of items, those clothing items over $100. Let me give you an example of how that works. This was a real challenge. I think as we looked around the country, we saw that 42 states currently tax clothing. Five states don't have any sales tax, and nine states, like Minnesota, have an exemption that includes the District of Columbia. So there were several states, three or four other states, that have an exemption amount so that you start at a different level. I think New York is a little bit over maybe $125. So there are several other states that have this beginning threshold amount that only if you purchase an item at or above that amount is there a sales tax on the item. So just to make it clear, I maybe didn't make this as clear as I should have earlier this morning. If you buy a jacket, let's say, that costs $150, then you will pay sales tax on that item and the full amount of that item, $150. On the other hand, if you buy other items along with that are under $100, you will not pay any sales tax on those other items, even if the bill comes over to over $100. So a receipt with a $150 jacket on it would have a sales tax, and that would be about $8.25 for sales tax for that jacket. If you had three shirts that were each $50, there would be no sales tax due on that transaction. If you had a jacket of $150 and three jackets of $50 each, there would be tax only on the $150 jacket item. So it is per item. Just to be clear, we struggled with the right amount to pick. Where do we start? And we're concerned about how that might play out. We certainly encourage discussion about that. But I think the clear thing is we wanted to exempt as many items, necessities as we could, to make sure that for those lower income folks, it's not such a burden for those items below $100. In addition, we've expanded the definition of services to include a range of business services, legal, accounting, architectural, specialized design, and computer services, management consulting services, advertising. There's a list in your packet of information that shows what's exempt, what remains exempt under current law. We have a list in there that shows you what items are taxed at a new lower rate, and then we also have a list of those items that are added for the first time. One of the overall impact of the sales tax rate reduction and expansion is to generate about $2 billion to the general fund in this first biennium. I think, Madam Chair, at that point I've hit the highlights, and I thought it would be good to open it up for questions, if that's okay.
Okay, great. And we have a list, and first is Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to the Tax Committee, Commissioner. A couple comments. First of all, you mentioned that there's a 9.7% property tax reduction. Are there any safeguards in your proposal to make sure that we're not backfilling? So let's say we increase local government aid's $80 million. And then the local units of government, the counties, the townships, the cities, and school districts, just raise it that much so it looks like it is a break-even point. That's one question. Are there safeguards there? One number I'm very interested in, we've heard fairness and how fair this is quite often, and how the job provider should pay their fair share. So with the new fourth tier, so that the top 2%, the job providers, are paying more, what percentage of the state income tax would they be paying? What percent would the top 2% be paying? And we can talk about, if you don't have that number, we can talk about that, because my guess is it's quite a bit more than one might think. So also, I think House File 1 is paying the school shift back, and I see we don't do that in this biennium. But what I see here so far is just simply massive tax increases on the poorest of the poor. And many of them are very, very regressive when we look at these sales taxes. And I just look in my area, veterinary services. That's, you know, we have, I think in Fillmore County, more hogs and beef cattle than any other county, or we're right up in there. And, you know, I first saw that and I thought, oh my gosh, we're taxing sick puppies and sick kittens with that tax on veterinary services. So I think that's a somewhat problematic. Then I go down to the sales tax on newspapers. Is that going to be called the First Amendment tax, taxing freedom of speech? So there's some concerns there. But if you could let me know, do you know off the top of your head, Commissioner, with the new fourth tier, increasing taxes on our job providers, what percentage would then they be paying of the state income tax?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, you have a nice menu of questions there.
I got a lot more. Madam Chair.
Let me start. First of all, I think I'll actually start with your sort of your last comments there in general about the your characterization of the proposal. I think it's important to remember that when we set out to solve this problem, it was a problem that included the deficit of $1.1 billion, which we solved. It was in making investments in education, early childhood education, all-day kindergarten, and other infrastructures, which we did. It was also to pay back the school shift in the next biennium, which we did. It was also designed to make sure that we solved the problem of property tax reduction and with the $500 rebate. So I think it's important, from my point of view, to make sure that when we discuss concerns or questions about the package, it's sort of like, well, what is an alternative package? So as we go through and talk about different challenges and issues with respect to the package works. It solves the problem. It solves the deficit. It pays back the schools. It makes investments. And it does so in a way that is sustainable for the long term. So that's where we're operating from, and we certainly encourage suggestions to make that package better. But in terms of looking at, for example, the safeguards to property taxes at the local level, we have a very unique relationship with the local governments, and we believe that we have to rely on the local government people, our local mayors and council people and commissioners around the state to make right decisions. They've been faced with some really difficult choices. I think we all know. In fact, some of you have been former county commissioners or city council people, and you all know the struggle that they've had this last decade. And I think one of the things in our making investments in local government aid is to make sure that they use that money wisely and effectively, and also with respect to the property tax rebate of $500 to each homeowner. I'm sure that the homeowners will notice if, in fact, the local jurisdictions turn around and try to raise taxes in a way that take away some of that. But with respect to the top 2%, what I don't have that particular number in front of me, but I'll get that for you. But let me give you another number, I think, that helps put this in perspective. One of the things when we were looking at the progressivity and fairness was, as you know, I've said this before, we've talked about it before, that the middle income folks in Minnesota pay about 12.3% of their total income to all the state local taxes, property tax, income tax, sales tax, tobacco tax, alcohol, tobacco tax. And the top 10% pay about 10.7% of their income to state and local taxes. If you look at the total revenue, now this is going back to 2008, but it does give us some sense of the magnitude and the relationships that we have. This is from the incident study on page 27 from 2008, and it shows that for all household income, now here we're not talking about taxable income, we're talking about all income. So if you look at all total income in Minnesota in 2008, there was about $173 billion across the state. And of that, 73 billion of that was paid, it was earned by the top 10%. About 42% of all the income in the state of Minnesota is earned by the top 10%. And if you take a look at the total taxes that are paid, about $19 billion in total taxes paid in 2008, and of that, about $7.5 billion was paid by the top 10%, and that's 37% of the total taxes paid. So we see, in terms of relative balance and proportionality, what the governor is trying to do is to make sure that we have a real opportunity for everyone to pay their fair share and to try to equalize the upper income salaries and income so that they pay an equal share or close to an equal share of their state taxes or their income to state and local taxes. But I'll get you, I don't have the number on the top 2%, but I'll get that to you later. And the final, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, your final point about the school shift, our challenge to you is we pay for the school shift in the second biennium. If you can come up with a revenue system that pays for it in the first biennium, we would certainly welcome looking at that kind of an option. I think the challenge is paying a $1.1 billion deficit and making investments and paying back $1.1 billion in this biennium would require even more and additional revenues than what we've proposed. So the final thing in terms of the expansion, I mean, you know, you raise issues about different groups that might be taxed, and actually, if I understand right, the veterinary services for farming and that kind of activity would still be exempt. But the key here is that whatever group we expand the sales tax to, people are going to object. I mean, you know, this 1967 was when the tax code. The code was revised to include a sales tax. And many of these things haven't been in since 1967. And if you're somebody on that list, you would prefer to stay off that list. But the fact of the matter is, that list, the list that we currently have is not sustainable. It doesn't really provide the kind of revenue source that we need from a robust sales tax in this state. It's one of the most narrow sales tax bases in the country. And that's why we pay 6.875. So if you want to exclude certain items or certain professions from the expansion, then the rate's got to go back up because we all pay 6.875 because it's paid on a very narrow base. And so the theory here is tax reform 101, broaden base and lower the rates, and let everybody pay the same lower rate.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, I would like to get that number. I want to know what percentage of the total income the top 2% the job providers are paying. So with the veterinary services, so the sick cows and hogs we don't pay taxes on, but the sick puppies and kittens we do.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I think the key is that when you buy the dog or the cat, then you should be paying tax on that and on the service for the veterinary service as well.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I have from House Research here some information about the governor's proposed $80 million increase to local government aids, and I'm still concerned about backfilling from local units because I was a mayor and I did it all the time. But if when you get to 2014 and you look at the formula for 2014 of the $80 million, the money going to the 80 counties outside the 7-county metro is $7.9 million. So we keep using the word fair. I'm just a poor farm boy from Section 20, Sumner Township, Fillmore County, trying to do good things for folks. And when I see $80 million and the outstate 80 counties get $7.9 million, that just doesn't seem fair.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think one of the things that you're talking about the county program aid.
No, local government aid. Government aid, Commissioner. Oh.
I think one of the things that when we work through the formula and try to come up with a way that distributed the money in a fair way, we tried to do so at a formula that was predictable and understandable. I don't have that formula in front of me, so I'd be glad to talk to you more in detail about that when we go through the form.
Madam Chair, that's fully phased in if there's no transition. So that's, I know it's a work in progress, and there's some work to do there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo. Did he step out? You know, Representative Garofalo used to bring puppies in his arms and sit at the testifier table and try to get us to give tax expenditures. And he brought puppies and sat right there. And so now he's next on the list, but he's not here. And he could have just segued with your question there. So we'll come back to him if he comes in. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions. I'm going to try and limit it so everybody else gets a chance to ask. But these are kind of the ones that pop up right away, especially given the testimony, Commissioner Brandt, that you talked about. I'm in particularly interested in the $100 clothing sales tax. Now, you mentioned that it's, you know, it's not on the other items that don't come up to $100. But say, for example, you have an item that's $120, but you have either discounts that are in the store or, you know, coupons that you bring in to get a discount, or sometimes stores give you credit because you've been a good customer and so forth. Would that item, because it's marked initially over $100 or $100, would that item still be taxed then, or because once it's rung up, it's reduced in price below $100? Do you know? Can you tell me?
Madam Chair, you know, traditionally we try to tax the value of the transaction in terms of what the actual item is before discounting. So, you know, I have to look at that. I don't have a particular answer for that, but whether there's a, if you have a coupon or a discount. Generally, we would tax at the value of the item before discount. So I'll have to look at that, though.
Okay.
Representative Anderson, you sound like you've shopped with coupons before.
I shop a lot. In fact, you know, I have a son.
You get that sense in that question.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a, actually, I had my mayor in, too, yesterday, and she was concerned about this because if you've ever had to buy female clothing, there's a lot that's over $100 that, you know, becomes a problem. And, in fact, if you ever go on Pinterest and see all the things that folks purchase there, there's a lot of items that are over $100, but you can, as a good shopper, can get it under $100. For example, my son, we shop at Gap a lot, and if you are a good customer at Gap, you get $10 off, and you can apply that to your purchases. For whatever purchase you want to make, but if you're still going to be taxed, that kind of defeats the point of the coupon of $10 off, or if there's a 20% off, or and so forth. So that's helpful to know. The other question that I had for you is regarding in the governor's budget, he reduces Met Transit by $48.6 million, I believe it is. So he reduces transit by that amount in the metro. Does he then, with that quarter cent tax, the new tax on transit that he's going to have for the seven county metro area, is he using that revenue then to backfill the $48.6 million that's cut in transit? Can you tell me that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, I think that's the case, but I'm not exactly sure, so I'll get that information for you. But the idea was for the quarter cent increase in the tax rate to fund the Met Council through that mechanism and not through the other mechanism. So but I don't want to speak out of turn.
And Madam Chair, Commissioner France, can you also tell me if that $48.6 million is counted in the $225 million of cuts?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I likewise don't know that one for sure. I'll have to get the answer for you on that one. Okay. I don't have the cut list in front of me.
Representative Anderson. I'll hold off so other people can ask now. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, thank you. Representative Loon.
I'm back.
Oh. Would you mind if we let Representative Garofalo?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't.
Representative Garofalo, we were talking about you shilling for your tax expenditures by holding puppies there in the past.
It's all about the puppies.
Yes.
That's right.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, Commissioner, first of all, thank you for being here today. And it might surprise you to know that the governor said something today that I agree with. He was asked about this tax plan and the budget, and he said that, quote, even I don't like a lot of it. So that's a heck of a sales job your boss is doing for you there. And I just want to tell you that I agree with the governor. I don't like a lot of this. I don't think a majority of Minnesotans like a lot of this. And I suspect that a majority of the legislature ain't going to like a lot of this either when they find out more of the details. My first question for you, Madam Chair and Commissioner, is how much shift revenue is in the tax portion of this bill?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
How much shift revenue? I said shift. I didn't say the other word. How much shift revenue
Commissioner,
is in this
portion? Representative Garofalo, what do you mean by that? Can you clarify a little bit?
Specifically, the June accelerated sales tax. How much are we how much are we changing that and shifting more revenue into this fiscal year?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that number in front of me. I'll get that for you. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me.
Madam
Chair. Hey, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, and for members of the committee that don't know, right now there's a mechanism in the sales tax called the June accelerated sales tax, where we falsely book July revenue into the June fiscal year. We accelerate revenue. Through the expansion of the sales tax base, we're expanding this over 4 years on just a statewide basis by $6 billion. There's going to be a pretty massive expansion in sales taxes, and part of that, it appears in the preliminary numbers, is we're shifting some revenue into this fiscal year, or fiscal year 15, and then in the tails, we'd be shifting it even more. Do you have an approximate estimation? I mean, can you give us a ballpark of how much shifting is taking place? 100, 150 million?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know. I haven't seen that schedule for some time, so I'm leery about guessing. But, you know, that was in existing law and is an issue I think we want to look at. So I appreciate your comments about that, but I don't have the number in front of me.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Commissioner, so to be fair, then there's not, I looked through the spreadsheets, I looked through the change documents, there's no mechanism to offset that additional shifting of the tax revenue to the sales tax. Again, because we're shifting a higher percentage of the tax code to the sales tax, there's additional revenue, so now we're having an additional shift, and I am saying shift, just to be clear, additional shift revenue. There's no mechanism to offset that at all, the one-time nature of that revenue?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is no mechanism at this point.
And Madam Chair and Commissioner, one of the things that I learned from you, Chair Lincheski, you taught me this in my first term, is you read the tax expenditure reports and you read the tax incident study, because as you taught me as a freshman, no one else reads them. And so if you read through these things, you find some interesting stuff. And Commissioner, this is something that I'm very concerned about, and it seems to me that we may be replicating the problems of the Viking Stadium to a statewide basis with regards to the electronic poll tabs revenue. Specifically, and maybe what I'll do is I'll get copies of this and I'll distribute it to members of the committee. Can you?
Okay, that's somebody's cell phone. Thank you.
So Representative Barrett was a guilty party? We want to out him on tape? Nope. Okay.
Well, we've all done it. It's okay. If you get close to it, and people often think if they turn the ringer off, it won't make it go, but it still does. You have to power it off. So, Representative Garofalo.
Or you can go into airplane mode too. That
yes.
Works too. So, Madam Chair and Commissioner, I took a look at the 2010 and 2012 tax expenditure reports. And this shows the amount of sales tax revenue that's being forgone by not taxing items. For example, consumer purchases of legal items, accounting and bookkeeping, business-to-business purchases. And there's something really interesting that happens between 2010 and 2012. We see just those two changes, and these are pre-budget. These are not... I'm not making these numbers up. These are from the tax expenditure report. In just fiscal year 2013, there's an extra $463 million of revenue that just pops up out of nowhere. It just shows up. And now, for those who would think that that's economic expansion, this is assuming the 6.5% sales tax rate, that assumes that $7 billion of additional non-taxable activity just sort of showed up. And I've talked to people in the accounting, the legal services, special design, safety deposit box rental businesses, and they're not seeing this level of increase. And so again, this is in the tax expenditure report, and Commissioner, I'm just wondering, I've looked at previous reports, I have not seen this level of change. This does not account, there's no methodological change in the tax expenditure reports to account for this. There's no certainly no rapid expansion in legal services, but I'll just give you one example. In the fiscal year 2012, it assumes a doubling of accounting and bookkeeping transactions of consumer purchases. So, I mean, there hasn't been a doubling of consumer behavior to account for this. Where do you think this money is coming from?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, some of it is coming from economic expansion. I mean, you go from 2010 and sort of just coming out of the recession to 2012, there is economic expansion in there. I don't know if that accounts for what percentage of that increase it accounts for, but there is a pretty dramatic increase in economic activity. So, but I'm not aware of any other changes that would make those numbers pop up other than the economic activity.
Representative Garofalo?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, so what I'll do is I'll make copies of this for committee members, but just to be clear, members, the assumptions between the 2010 and 2012 tax expenditure report are that accounting and bookkeeping services doubled in this are going to double in this state. It's the same fiscal year, just different economic assumptions. And again, this is concerning because the problems we're seeing with e-poll tabs right now, where we were told to trust the numbers. And Commissioner, I want to be clear, I'm not challenging your honesty on this issue at all. The numbers we use to fund that stadium, it's pretty clear it ain't working. It's not going to happen. And if we export the Vikings problem to the statewide budget, we're going to have a crisis in this state we haven't seen before. Final question I have is with regards to the sales tax increases. We've seen different numbers floating around, but in the upcoming 14-15 biennium, we book sales tax increases of in excess of $2.1 billion. But in 16 and 17, that number skyrockets to $3.4 billion. So we see an over 50% increase in the sales tax. Can you explain to members of the committee why in the upcoming budget there's $2.1 billion of sales tax increase and why it jumps so much to $3.4 billion in the next budget?
Madam Chair, Representative, a big chunk of that is the fact that the sales tax expansion and rate reduction would occur on January 1, 2014. So this biennium has it both a ramp up and a period where the sales tax wouldn't be collected. So part of the increase is related to a full biennium, if you will. The next biennium has two full years. This biennium only has about a year and a half of revenue in this first stream of income production. And then the other component of that is the projection, the economic growth projections that will, assuming that economic recovery continues, that's part of the growth that we see in the future.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, my final question.
Yes, please.
So the numbers we see on this spreadsheet for the sales tax are that it's a $5.6 billion increase in the sales tax, phased in, as you mentioned, for the next biennium, and then fully implemented in the tails. When we add on the local sales tax increases, the sales tax increases for the metro area, what would be the, do you have an approximate of what the 4-year number is? I calculated it over $6 billion, but I find that people seem to question my numbers for some reason. When you total up those numbers, can you give us a number of, again, including the local sales tax, the metro area sales tax increase, plus the phased-in sales tax increase, what is that sales tax increase number between now and the next biennium?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'll get that for you. I don't have that particular total.
Okay, and I guess this will be my last question then, Madam Chair. Commissioner, do local school districts, when they hire out these business-to-business services, local units of government, when they hire out these business-to-business services, do they have to pay the sales tax, or is it only going to be the private sector?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, for example, currently the local units of government do have to pay for outside services and under our current law. And so these new services would have to be paid by the local units of government. To the extent they're related to educational services or not, would still be exempt, but some other professional services would be, there would be a sales tax on those professional services.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And, you know, members, as we go forward, because we will have a lot of questions for quite a while, I would imagine, and certainly members should do whatever they feel comfortable with, but, you know, I was trying to track everything you're asking, Representative Garofalo, but because I don't have what you have, it's hard often for the committee to even follow the questions of other members. So, you know, sometimes giving us a little education, too, to kind of track what you were following, and can I just ask you, were you asking about something, your question a couple back? You're asking about before today what's going on in the tax expenditure growth, and then secondarily you're asking related to the proposal.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what happens is that the assumptions in our revenue growth, we don't have a bill yet for the committee to read,
right?
And so these are from the tax expenditure report, which we would assume would have some basis in the revenue note of the $2.1 billion in the next budget, these $5.6 billion in the next 4 years. And the expenditure report, which I'll make copies of this and I'll distribute to the committee today, has a massive increase in those expenditures. There's close to $500 million of it. And that's what that question was related to, Madam Chair, is if, because there's nothing in the footnotes noting a methodological change. And so that's a concern.
And I do think, just hearing that again, my guess is this is a question for Dr. Wilson at another time, because I do believe that the pre-proposal kind of numbers, and we'll get into that with the tax expenditure report when we hear it. I mean, I think the recession beginning to go away will just grow the sales tax base naturally. And it is really you know, it's the folks who, it's not the governor and Commissioner Franz who are writing that tax expenditure report, as you well know, and it's the same folks, no matter who's in the majority, who are doing it. I think it's widely viewed as a pretty neutral source. So I think we should get that answered. I'm just guessing, but I don't know that it, you know, is related to the governor's proposal.
Well, but Madam Chair, this is why it's relevant, is because we are seeing a doubling of accounting and bookkeeping sales taxes that they're saying are happening because of economic growth. Now, certainly, the decisions this legislature has made in the last 2 years have been contributed to the economic growth of the state of Minnesota, and I would agree to that. I can't find anybody who thinks that accounting and bookkeeping services, the taxable portion of that, and this is just the consumer purchases, have doubled. No one has thought that that industry has doubled. And so the relevant portion is that if our revenue notes in the governor's budget are based off of numbers that are inaccurate or incomplete, then we're going to have, I mean, we'll solve the problem in February, and you're going to come back in November with one heck of a disaster on your hands.
Okay. I understand your question a little better now, and I do think we need to get some more information going forward as we put together the omnibus tax bill. Representative Loon, then Lesh, then Drazkowski. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate you being here and responding to some of our questions and outlining the governor's plans with regards to taxes. I've looked at this, and I know it may be a little different depending on what types of services you're talking about, but what's in what states. But can you refresh me what states put a tax on business-to-business services? How many states do that currently?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, but it's a complicated picture. It's not it's not simple because every state seems to do it a little bit differently. For example, five states currently tax legal and accounting services. But if you take a look at consumer services and professional business services, you'll see that like 47 states tax some form of consumer services, and 47 states tax some form of professional services. The problem is in comparing, what does that mean? South Dakota, for example, has a very broad tax on services and tax, you know, virtually all professional services. So one of the things we'll put together a more detailed list to show you that comparison, but it's really a mixed bag. We see that more and more states are adding services to their sales tax base. In fact, we're seeing that happen kind of on a regular basis the last few years. So the trend certainly is that way. But other than the five states I know about legal and accounting services, I don't have the other states in my mind. But it's a real mixed bag in terms of what states tax what services.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioners. And I know states have been looking at various consumer services and that, but when it comes to business-to-business taxes, it's my understanding that that is fairly rare. States like South Dakota are one of the few states that tax services are considered to be primarily business-to-business transactions. And I assume that's partially because South Dakota has no income tax, no corporate tax bases to pull from. So in looking at what the governor's proposed in that and looking at some of the studies that have been done, I'm not aware of any that broadly advocate for business-to-business taxes because of a couple of reasons. One is the concept of pyramiding and cascading, and maybe you could, just for the benefit of folks who may be new to the tax committee or our audience, you could kind of fill us in on what that is.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, glad to. Thank you. One of the concerns that you hear raised about taxing business and business services is that there'll be a what we call a cascading effect. So if one company purchases professional services and then in turn pays tax on that and then in turn puts out a product or another service, that tax has now been paid by the original business that bought the services and then turned around and passed on that tax to the consumer. We all know, for example, that business taxes tend to be passed on either through lower profits by the owners, through higher wages sometimes, or lower wages sometimes, and maybe higher prices, or sometimes it's exported out of the state of Minnesota. So the transfer of the taxation of business services is a complex one that is not easy to follow. And one of the things that the incident study that we do in Minnesota tries to do is tries to follow where do those, excuse me, where do those taxes flow through in our economy. And so when we looked at the rate reduction to 5.5%, the key there was, can we get the overall rate low enough so that the average consumer really wouldn't pay any more in sales tax directly throughout the year. So in looking at the 5.5% rate, we've discovered that for the average consumer, the typical consumer like all of us might be, the rate reduction on what you're already buying is enough to offset the increase in taxes of new things that are added. And that's because most of the additional taxes are on business services, and the businesses will pay a big chunk of that. So in terms of the sort of the sweet spot between lowering that rate far enough down so that the consumers don't pay more, but the businesses pay that difference, is where we came out on this particular provision. And we will have to study where this tax on business services gets transferred, because we know that it will, but economists study that and we'll have to figure out. But we do know up front that consumers will not pay additional sales taxes if they're a typical consumer.
Representative Loom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I mean, what data does the department have to back that up? Because most studies that have been done on this topic in the past, I have one from the Council on State Taxation, states that, you know, pyramiding or cascading is a real impact on consumers and puts consumers paid eventually end up paying twice or additional tax on that, because the business passed the cost of the sales tax they're paying onto the consumers, plus you've got the final point of sale tax on those consumers. And so I'm curious as to the data that the department may have to show that all of this is going to add up to less taxes paid by consumers, and I just find that hard to believe. If you could provide data to the committee, I think that would be helpful. Can you describe to us how the department calculates sort of that cost of government when it's embedded in those business-to-business taxes that are passed on to consumers?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, one of the things that the department looked examined was typical purchasing activity by the typical consumer. And by looking at what consumers typically buy, 56% of the current sales tax is paid by consumers. 44% is paid for by businesses. So if you look at that and you model typical consumer behavior, the department found that overall, typical consumer will not pay any additional direct sales tax. We're not talking about the transfer tax. We're talking about additional sales tax. What happens then is, even for some businesses, as I mentioned, 44% of the current tax and sales tax is paid by businesses. Well, some of those businesses will actually see a reduction in what they pay overall as well, depending upon what kind of business they're in. A lot of manufacturing companies, for example, who already buy a lot of things that are taxable but don't rely on a lot of professional services, will actually end up paying less. So that also will be cascaded through the system. So that's what the difficulty is, figuring out what's the cascading effect of both lower costs for business and the higher cost on the sales tax for business to business. That is the thing that will get that analysis is what will determine how this gets transferred in the future through businesses back to the consumers.
Representative.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and Madam Chair. I would be curious at looking more in detail at the department's analysis of that, because, as you mentioned, you know, the breakdown of the taxes between consumers and businesses, when you average it out, you know, I'll just take your number at face value with regards to 44%, but there are certain services in which businesses pay almost all of those taxes: advertising, architecture and engineering, employment services, and that hit hardest at business. And there's a reason that many states do not delve into this area of sales taxes, and it's because of, again, pyramiding, but also the detriment that those taxes would pose on a state's economy. And how many of the states surrounding Minnesota have the similar type of sales taxes on business-to-business services that are proposed in the governor's budget?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, obviously, as we discussed earlier, South Dakota is one, and I know there's some other professional services in some of the other states, but I think when you talk about the concern about the economy, I think one of the things that we looked at in examining how to solve this problem and how to more fairly distribute the tax burden was in solving the threat to the economy. It is likewise a threat to the economy to not have a balanced budget, to have deficits year after year, to not make investments. I mean, one of the things we heard from many, many businesses was, in addition to trying to make the tax system more fair, where everyone pays their fair share, the other thing that businesses make quite clear is they expect this government or this state government to finance itself in a way that's predictable, that's sustainable, makes investments in infrastructure so they can get their product to market, so they can get an educated workforce, so they can get health care. So the overall investment issue that you mentioned is an important one, but it's a global investment issue. And I think whenever you start trying to take one piece of this package and say that this part of the package doesn't work because it doesn't fund investment, well, the fact of the matter is the entire package is designed to fund investment in Minnesota, both in terms of solving the long-term deficit problem and sustainability and paying back our bills, and then making sure that there are investments for education and health care. So I just want to every now and then kind of pull us back and remind everyone that there, as Representative Garofalo mentioned, the governor said there are a lot of people who don't like certain parts of this. But the point is, there are a lot of people that like certain parts of it, but the overall thing that we think people will like and believe in is that it's a balanced budget. It's a balanced budget for this biennium, for the next biennium. It pays back all of our bills, it solves the deficit, and it makes investments. So our challenge to all of you is, can you come up with a better package that does all those things and raises less revenue, or what are the cuts going to be? What are you all going to tell us, okay, if we're not going to have the revenue and the business-to-business services, what are we going to cut? Because I think we have to make those kind of choices for the governor's perspective to solve these problems.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just wrap up. And I appreciate the commissioner's, the difficult position that we're all in, and I would agree that creating a sustainable budget is important to all of us. I think probably how we would go about that are different. But again, in the whole area of business-to-business services and tax fairness and paying your fair share and where those come from, again, this is a topic that has been much studied. And, you know, you mentioned some of the commissions that have studied this issue. I'm not aware of any of them advocating strongly in any way for business-to-business taxes, because of the regressive impact on consumers, and our tax incidence studies show that same thing. And the other is the competitiveness factor for our businesses. And again, studies I've looked at indicate that this is going to come squarely, probably out of the pockets of middle-class families through reduced wages, through reduced employment opportunities. As businesses are going to have to account for these costs somewhere, and when other states around us are not doing similar taxes, they're going to be at a disadvantage. So I certainly hope as the governor's budget moves through the process that we will look carefully at those factors.
Thank you. And next is Representative Lesh. Representative Lesh, did you know that Commissioner Franz is actually a commissioner today? We should have said,
are we going to sing happy birthday?
He was confirmed by the Senate today, members. So congratulations.
Congratulations.
Commissioner, before Representative Lesh adds a question, what took them so long?
Well,
what's wrong with you that they took till today to do that?
You're really challenging me, Chair. I'm sorry. Did they actually vote on it on the floor?
I guess in taxes, right?
I just want to be clear. I don't want to claim credit for anything that hasn't happened.
But if you get out of taxes, aren't you kind of done over there? Isn't that how it works?
as a lawyer, let me just say, as a lawyer, I learned, and when Chair Scoey today, after they concluded and voted my confirmation out of the committee, and he wanted to go on and talk about the bill like we are, the governor's package like we are today, I said, well, you know, this is putting me in an awkward position, because as a lawyer, whenever I got a judge to agree with me, I knew the first thing to do was to say thank you and sit down and leave, right? And so I was anxious to get out of the room before they changed their mind, before that hearing was over. But thank you. It did get through the tax committee.
Well, congratulations on that. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Franz, I'd like to congratulate you personally as one of the few people in this room who's ever gotten anything through the Senate. I'm wondering, Commissioner Franz, Thank you. I'm here all week.
Nice.
Right. We're going to buy both of you a puppy for that.
Meow. Commissioner Franz, I'm wondering if you can tell me, under the current system, let's say I make $750,000 a year, and I'm thinking about this question in the context of Representative David's questions about how we're providing jobs and where the jobs come from. Say I'm making $750,000 a year, and times are tough. I want a butler and a chauffeur, but I can't afford both. They're going to have to share the duty of one person. It's going to be a dual job. So, and I can afford $50,000 to pay a chauffeur / butler. How much, under the current system, do I have to pay the state of Minnesota in order to create that job?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, I've never really pondered this particular problem before for obvious reasons. But so under the current system, you know, the taxes that you would pay on those services would be zero at this point under the current for sales tax. If you're paying for the services, if they were charging you the sales tax under the new system, it'd be at 5.5%. But if that was part of your business, that would be a deductible business expense unless it's just for your personal chauffeuring. And so then it would come out of your hide, so to speak.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused because I've been hearing a lot about job-killing tax increases, and I'm surprised to hear you say that I wouldn't have to pay anything to the state of Minnesota if I'm going to hire a $50,000 butler chauffeur. I think there is some workers' comp costs, maybe. I'm not sure what that is. But as far as taxes, you're telling me that I don't pay anything to the state of Minnesota Department of Revenue for that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, but you're making me nervous, but yes.
Okay.
That's what I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's what I do best. I make people nervous, Madam Chair. Ask my wife. So when we're looking back at the 2008 incidence study that you cited earlier, I'm wondering... you cited the top 10%, which $750,000 a year would certainly be in the top 10%. You stated the percentages paid of income gain and then the percentages of taxes paid by that group, but I didn't hear the solid numbers. Can you tell me again what those solid numbers are? I recall you saying that the highest earning 10% earned 43% of the income and paid 37% of the taxes. Is that accurate? And if so, what are the corresponding hard numbers on that?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, very, very close. You're listening very, very, very well. So $173 billion in total income, in total household income in the state of Minnesota for 2008. Of that, $73 billion was earned by the top 10%, which is 42% of the $173 billion. Now, when you slip over to the side transfer over to the side of paying taxes, total state and local taxes paid in 2008 under this study showed $19.9 billion. And of that, the top 10% paid 37%, or $7.5 billion.
And that thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe you said that was 37%. Thank you. So doing the quick math here, we're looking at a ballpark of $65 billion. Who then, Commissioner, pays for the wealthiest 10% of $65 billion that they're not paying?
Commissioner.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative, I don't...
Well, if you... I should clarify. Thank you. If you're assuming taxes is flat and then everyone pays the same percentage, that if you earned 42% of the money, you would pay 42% of the taxes. They're not. They're paying 37% of the taxes. So that 5% equates to $65 billion. If the wealthiest 10% under the current system are not paying that $65 billion, who pays it?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. The other 90% of Minnesotans.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering that $65 billion, we got to be able to stick it on someone else. And I'm thinking maybe the puppies and kittens that Representative Davis was talking about. They ought to pull their fair share. They're not pulling their weight in my household, I can tell you that. But this commissioner, I think, is a bold plan, as has been stated. Some people aren't going to like it. But if the numbers don't work out, and I understand Representative Garofalo is nervous about that based upon what he's seeing with the Vikings' revenue projections. I mean, I know Representative Garofalo would never vote for a bill that had numbers like that, a Vikings bill like that. Isn't that right, Representative Garofalo?
Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair, Representative Lush, you're right. Had those numbers been presented to us last year, you're absolutely right. I never would have voted for it.
Representative
okay.
Lush.
Mm-hmm. Well, operative word, Madam Chair.
Not my fault.
You know, I thought this was the year we were not doing stadiums, but I'm wrong, I guess.
I recall Representative Rukavina in this committee regularly going on scathing rampages and being queried on, Representative Rukavina, did you vote for that bill? And he would usually blow his stack, and it was a great show for the rest of us, too. So I'm kind of disappointed you didn't blow your stack, Representative Garofalo, and give us a good show.
Representative Garofalo, why didn't you?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, it's not my mistake that you answered the wrong question. You asked the wrong question, so you can't blame me for that.
Representative Lesh, do you want to ask the right question?
I think I did. I think everyone knows okay. I did, Madam Chair. Thank you. Commissioner, change is difficult. I remember basic training. Drill sergeants drilling into these kids, including me. You gotta be able to do the hard right instead of the easy wrong. This is hard. Change is difficult to swallow, especially when it's the right thing to do. We gotta do the hard right here instead of the easy wrong. And I think my friends around this table on the hard right would appreciate that. That's all, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. This is kind of an awkward place to sit.
Yeah.
But, I haven't found any of the plan that I like so far. But I'm wondering, in the modeling, there's job-killing tax increases throughout this proposal, Commissioner. If you start with the upper 2% income increase here, the 2% bracket boost for those who happen to be our job providers, Certainly, there's going to be some job losses there. I'm curious as to whether you've modeled for those jobs leaving and the related income leaving because of those. Also, as you look at the sales tax increases, whether it's the business-to-business sales tax or the sales tax on merchandise, I think about the district I represent, which is along a border. And I think about and I hear from constituents already about this proposal and the business loss that is going to occur from retailers, from business that is coming in from Wisconsin. And you wonder about the business-to-business taxes and their effect on many of those same businesses along the border who are now going to buy their business services in Wisconsin instead of Minnesota. In each of those three places, I'm wondering, in your modeling for this, the jobs that are killed at the upper income area, the jobs that are killed with the merchandise sales tax leaving, and the jobs that are killed with the business-to-business sales taxes, did you model for related decrease in state tax revenue because of those particular job-killing tax increases?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative. We modeled after a lot of things. one of the things we try to model a lot is what's happened over the last 30 years whenever new taxes have been proposed. So we took a look at economic growth and new taxes both nationally and locally, and we found that we found no credible evidence anywhere in any state of people fleeing a state because of a tax increase. What we found in Minnesota was that we've made a lot of changes over the years in Minnesota, and we're not known as a low-tax state. We never have been. I think the governor, Dayton, says it quite clearly that we're a high, he likes to think of us as a high-value state. We provide high value in terms of education and infrastructure and quality of life. And we also have like the the 11th highest per capita income now in the United States. So if you take a look at the low tax states, the lowest tax states in the country, what you see is low economic growth. You see low per capita income ranking. So yes, we modeled this proposal after looking at how do investments change the path of a state. And what we've seen in Minnesota is growth, and over the long term, since the 1970s, we've seen a continued improvement in the Fortune 500 companies here and the quality of companies here. And we clearly, like you, we want those people to stay. We're interested in making sure that all businesses stay, that all businesses grow here. But our assumptions and looking at past behavior is that when you do the right things, when you make the right investments and you make the right kind of revenue changes that make sense and are fair, you don't see loss of jobs. What you see is growth. And so the governor's package is really designed to make sure that we hit that sweet spot where you show the rest of the country, you show the people who are here, that we're interested in making sure that Minnesota stays great, we invest in all the right things, and that we make sure that the tax system is as fair as it can be. We modeled after a lot of different things, but I think the success of Minnesota is not based on shying away from trying to make this a great state, and we have to pay for these things. And so the real question is, how are we going to pay to keep Minnesota on this path of greatness? Where's the money going to come from? Because we cut the education, we cut higher ed the last biennium, we've cut schools, and so there's no business person that I've ever talked to.
Madam Chair,
Representative David.
We put massive increases in K-12. Just ask my superintendents.
Commissioner.
Maybe I misspoke on that part.
Yes, you
higher
did.
Ed. I think you're on higher ed.
It's a touchy subject.
Correct. Higher ed. Anyway, the point being that, you know, we really want to make sure that we keep Minnesota on the right path and we do the right kinds of investments. And the challenge is if we don't make these tax changes, if we don't implement this tax policy, how are we going to continue to invest in higher education and K-12, all day kindergarten? So how are we going to do that without this revenue? I think that's the challenge, and that's what we tried to look at in terms of modeling what was done in the past.
Representative Braskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. We have invested a lot of money in our state government, the question here, of course, is spending. I mean, the governor wants to increase spending by $2.7 billion over base and $3.7 billion over actual or something like that. And this is how the governor pays for it, is by increasing the taxation burden on Minnesotans. Commissioner, I'd encourage you to look at what Maryland and California learned with their high tax rates and the exodus that they saw of their job providers there. I think those readings are rather instructive. And I have heard anecdotally from businesses in southeast Minnesota about particular retailers that experience business from Wisconsin consumers who come over for bulk purchases from long distances only because of the fact that we don't have sales tax on clothing in this state. So, those are some realities. Back to what Representative Garofalo was saying earlier, I don't know if I trust or know that the governor has built those realities and those decreases in revenue into this particular budget. But aside from that, I have one last question, and that relates to the assertion that the average sales taxpayer is actually going to spend or be taxed the same amount under this particular proposal, which I just can't wrap my head around. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers here, and we are going to extract an additional $2 billion or $2.1 billion more in this next biennium than we did in the current biennium from the pockets of Minnesotans, and then another $3.4 billion in the next biennium after that compared to the current biennium. how can it be that, given the fact we're taking billions of dollars more in taxes from people, that they're actually paying the same amount?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, dealing with the tax increases in some of the other states, Oregon and Maryland are two states that I'm familiar with that did increase taxes on the upper income earners a few years ago, and part of what they experienced in the reduction in the number of high income earners was simply a result of the recession. So there's no evidence that we were able to find that there was actually people fleeing the state. It's just that they were making less money because of the Great Recession that we just incurred or just went through. Now, in terms of looking at the typical consumer, one of the things that is clear is that the 20% rate reduction is why this happens. It's only because the rate reduction is so significant that you'll see the typical consumer will not pay any more in sales tax directly, because what they're buying is at such a lower rate that it offsets the consumer purchases or the purchases that they make under the new tax base. And that's in part because a lot of the new services that are taxed are business services. So not consumers don't typically purchase that many professional services. So that's why it works for the typical consumer. It is true that the businesses will incur more tax liability as a result of the business-to-business service.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. So I think I understand that you're suggesting that that the belief is that consumers are not going to pay for that business-to-business tax. And I think, and I encourage you, Commissioner, I know you've been all around the state, I encourage you to ask the average consumer on the street if they believe that, because I don't think they do.
Okay, so members, I have the list, and we're going to start up with it again tomorrow, but here it is for the moment, just so you know. Representative Runbeck, Barrett, Moline, Zellers, Earhart, Loeffler, Liebling, Marquardt. And, Commissioner, I read that because this group is an inquisitive group and has lots of questions. And, you know, sometimes it gets tedious, and I know you've got a lot of staff who will continue to be with us. We really do need more information. I think the requests that people have are just the beginning, and this is a really big item, and members on both sides of the aisle will want to see the detail. And so, if we can kind of keep track of what people are looking for, too, I'm sure you have somebody working with you who's doing that out there. And we will start up again tomorrow with Representative Runbeck. I'm going to quickly refer down to the Division House Files 55, 81, 104, 114, and 126. And with that, members, we're adjourned, and we'll start again tomorrow.